Hi, I'm Vincent Toops, and this is my first screencast. I'm giving a talk next week about monadic parser combinators to the local functional programmers meetup group in the Triangle area in North Carolina, and as a way of practicing and also because I think it's interesting in a greater context, I'm going to go ahead and give the talk as a screencast. Okay, so we are going to be working the entire screencast inside of Emacs, and the programming language we're going to use to demonstrate monadic parser combinators is Emacs Lisp. So what we're looking at here is an Emacs Lisp window with some Emacs Lisp code. So these colons mean a comment, and then this stuff here is Emacs Lisp. So the reason I'm using Emacs Lisp is because I use it as a programming language all the time, and I like to port ideas that are interesting into Emacs Lisp so that I can get familiar with them. But also because it actually turns out Emacs is a pretty good presentation environment because we can just click and evaluate code inside a buffer as we go. And when we do evaluate a piece of code, you'll see the result of that evaluation printed out down here in this region called the mini buffer. So as we do the talk, we'll click on little pieces of code and stuff will pop up down here. So just pay attention to this area for the results of computations. Okay, so what is this talk about? Well, we're going to be talking about monadic parser combinators, and this is a way of writing purely functional parsers in a way that allows us to build parsers up from the ground up. So we start with very, very simple parsers, they're easy to write, and we build from these easy parsers complex parsers. And so this lets us treat our parsers exactly as we would treat any other programming task. We build lots of tiny pieces and we put them together. And importantly, these parsers are going to be purely functional, so they'll be side effect free, so our code's really simple, easy to reason about once you get over the hump of thinking in a purely functional way. And because we're combining them, we're going to be writing lots of combinators, which are functions which operate on parsers. And as we go through the talk, we'll be thinking about the parsers and the way we're combining them, and we'll eventually realize these parsers form a monad. And so we'll start talking about monadic notation and binding and all the things that make a monad, and then we'll sort of have a complete survey of how this stuff works. Okay, so on to the first slide. As I said here, we're going to be working in Emacs Lisp, and you don't need to know Emacs Lisp to follow along, just have a sort of open mind and roll with the punches. What we're looking at here is a bunch of functions we're going to define to help us out during the rest of the talk. And this is a good example of a function definition in Emacs Lisp. Define says we're defining a function. This is the name of the function here, and the arguments are listed in this list, and this is the body. And what we're looking at here actually is a function call to a function called substring. Here's the arguments to that function call. So if you're familiar with other scripting languages like Python or even other languages from the ALGOL family, the only real difference is that this function call, you would move the name of the function outside of the parentheses and insert commas between the arguments, and then you'd have something that looked like a function call in Python or whatever. Okay, so these functions are necessary for our parsers, so let's define. String head just gives us the first character of a string. String tail gives us the rest of the string. And we're going to define a data structure pair. Cons is an implementation detail which will be familiar to Lispers, but a pair, you should just think of a pair as being two things, so we have a data structure that holds two things. And the things we're going to be holding are a parsed value, so in other words, a parser will get a string as input and will produce some value if it can. And that value that the parser produces will be the parsed value. And the leftovers will be in the second part of the pair, that's just the string that the parser did not parse. So because we're writing very simple parsers, each parser that we write will tend to parse a very small amount of the input, and then it will return what it thinks of that small amount of the input and also the rest of the input, which a later parser will handle. So we define these functions, and they let us build parsers. So these are sort of the underlying functions. Okay, so here is, without further ado, our first parser. It's called parse A because it takes an input, and unless that input is empty, it says, it checks to see if the first character of the input using string head is the letter A. And if it is the letter A, it says, okay, the pair that it returns says found A. That's the parsed value. And the leftover of the input is the tail of the string. And if the parser doesn't get something that it recognizes, in this case the character A, it returns nil, which is no value. So this is a way for parsers to signal that they failed to accomplish anything. So if you're familiar with parsing in other contexts, you might be saying, why do we pass around the input and why are we returning these two values from this function? And the reason is because we want to maintain pure functional semantics. So we need to pass around the string that we're parsing between every function that we call. Okay, so if we define parse A, and then we use it on a string, we get found A, bracadabra, because this string starts with an A, abracadabra. And if we pass the function a string that doesn't start with A, we just get the nil value. The parser says, basically, I failed, and I'm bailing out of the parsing process. Okay, so far so good. Okay, now, we could, of course, go crazy right now, just enumerating all sorts of atomic parsers, simple parsers. But actually, I want to talk about the simplest possible parser first, which is just the anything parser. If you look at other contexts, like Drew Crampsey's Smug parser library for Common Lisp, he'll call this item, but it's useful to call this function anything. It is a parser, and we have to start thinking about types. Parsers always take a string as an input and return a pair, or nil. So this function here takes an input and returns a pair, and it's the anything parser, so it just checks to see if the input has any content at all, and if it does, it just returns the head of the string. So this is sort of the simplest parser, and its utility will become useful later. And then I mentioned at the very beginning of the talk that we'd be talking about parameterized parsers or combinators, that is, functions that produce parsers or accept parsers and modify them. And this is one such function. Simple parser return is not a parser itself. It's a function which returns a function which is a parser. And rather than doing anything with the input, this inner function just returns the pair of the value past the simple parser return and the input. And so this function, if you were imagining chaining parsers together and you wanted to insert something into the parser stream, this function would do that. It would give you a way of saying, I'm going to make a parser that returns whatever I want it to return. Now there's a curio here that we should mention for people who are familiar with, say, Common Lisp or Scheme. Emacs Lisp is dynamically scoped by default, so we have to tell Emacs that we want a lexical variable value, VAL, so that when we call this lambda later, that val will be defined. In standard Emacs Lisp, if we just returned a lambda input that made reference to value, and we tried to call that function later, it would say there was no value binding, and it would give us an error. So lexical let just creates a lexical scope in which the following code is executed. Okay. So now, finally, there's one more important atomic parser, and that is the nil parser, the parser which always fails. So with these atomic parsers in mind, we can start asking questions about combining parsers together. Okay, so now let's think about combining parsers. We can, of course, define another parser, parse B. And this is a pretty easy parser to understand. It's just like parse A, except that it only parses the character B, and if it doesn't find B, it fails. So if we then want to produce a parser which parses only the string AB, we have to combine our A parser and our B parser. But we run into some problems, and the problem essentially is that our parsers return something, a pair of inputs, a pair of values, the parsed value and the leftover input. But our subsequent parsers are only interested in the second part of that value, that is the leftover input. The parse AB essentially follows the strategy of applying parse A to the input, checking to see if we got a result, so making sure that the parser succeeded. And then if we got a result, we split that result into its parsed value and its leftover input, and we use that leftover input with parse B, and we get a B result. And again, we check to see if it's nil. And if it isn't nil, we return a pair that contains both parsed values, A and B, and the leftover from the B result. So that is pretty straightforward. And I want you to think at this point about a couple of facts. One is that when we chain parsers together, we need to pass around the state of the parser, or the state of the input that the parser is using. And we also need to remember the parsed values so that we can do something with them later, right? So if we can combine them into a list, as we do in this example. So here's our parser, parse AB, and if we parse the string abracadabra, it finds A and it finds B, and then it returns the rest of the string recadabra. And you'll see that we fail to parse these other strings because they don't have AB as the beginning of the string. Okay, so that's good enough, but what if we have, Now let's think about factoring out this function of combining parsers. So we're going to take this parse AB, and we're going to factor it out into a function that just combines two parsers in general. And so remember how I said in the last slide that we had two problems with combining parsers. One was passing around the state of the input, and the other was collecting the values that the parsers produce. So our combined parsers function takes two parsers, and it's a combinator because it manipulates parsers, and it also takes a function called with. And this is the Emacs Lisp way of giving with a default value, and we're going to give it the default value of the list function, the function that gives us a list of things. It combines things to a list. So what we're going to do is use this combine parsers function to parse P1 and P2, thread the input state through that parsing process, and then combine the values with the function specified by the user with the list function. And if we don't specify one, we'll just combine them with list. Okay, so because we're returning a parser that's going to need to remember these parser values and the function, we create a lexical scope with lexical let. That's simple enough. And then we return a function, because this is a function that returns a parser, and a parser is itself a function. It, of course, takes the input, which is a string, checks to see if it's empty. If it isn't empty, we call parser 1 on that input. That gives us a result. That result could be either a pair or it could be nil. If it's nil, we're done. The parser returns nil. If the pair is not nil, we destructure that pair into a value, the parsed value, and the leftovers from parser 1. And we produce a new pair or nil value by calling parser 2 on the leftovers. Again, we check to see if the leftover, if R2 is not nil. If it isn't nil, we then create a pair, the output of this parser, that combines value 1 and value 2 with the function that's passed in. So if it was just list that was passed in, we return a list of v1 and v2. But it could be any kind of combination, and you'll see why that'll be useful later. And finally, that pair's second element is the leftover from the second parser. So this is very, very similar. We're basically retreading the ground we treaded in the previous slide, except now we factored the parsers out of the question so we can combine parsers at will. And you can see now that the equivalent of the function we wrote in the last slide is just combine parsers, parse A, parse B. And if we apply that to a string that has AB as its first character, we get the expected result. We parse that string. Okay, so far so good. We've got these little parsers, and we're making a go of combining them together. Okay, so now imagine that you have you want to parse something complicated, like a whole programming language syntax or something maybe less complicated, but still that involves more than just two parsers. You're gonna have to start imagining using this function combine parsers in all sorts of different ways with all sorts of different combination functions that you're passing in. Because, for instance, we can combine parsers A and B, which then produces a parser which returns a list. So if we want to combine that parser with a third value, we have to pass in a different combination function that knows how to combine a list and another value. And in general, things get pretty complicated because you really want to be able to do stuff with any of the values that are parsed, at least locally. And it's very difficult to squeeze that into one function call using just this combined parsers. So let's actually try it, though. Here's parse C, which does, by now you should expect, it just parses the letter C. And here's the function parse ABC. So we go inside to outside. Combine parsers, parse A, parse B, parses the string AB. We then combine that parser that's produced by this expression with combine parsers and parse C. Now remember, combine parsers parse A, parse B produces a list parser value. So we have to suffix the value of parse C onto that list. So we're actually passing in a different function to combine the values together. But so it's a little complicated, but when we do this, we get the behavior we expect. We get a return value that's a list of all of the found values and the rest of the input that we didn't parse. Okay, so now you can imagine trying to build an arbitrary parser that includes all sorts of complicated functions, and it can be a little bit of a headache. So let's take a step into the realm of abstraction and think a little bit about another way of combining parsers together. Now remember that we wanted to basically have some way of doing two things: passing the input around between parsers, and also passing the parsed value down the chain so that that parsed value could be combined with a subsequent value. And it turns out the right way to factor out, or one of the ways to factor out this process, is to think of a function called simple parser bind. This function is in fact the bind operation for the parser monad, but more importantly, it gives us a way of combining a parser and a function which is waiting for some values to produce a parser. So this function, this of course is a function which takes two functions as input parameters, one of them is a parser, and this is going to be a function that will produce a parser when it receives a value. And this is like our simple parser return. That's a function which is waiting for a value, and then it will be able to produce a parser when you give it that value. And so it's a function which has an unbound variable, and we're going to bind that variable using parser bind to the result of this parser. So not the output, but just the result. And then parser bind will also handle passing around the input between those different functions. Okay, so let's get into the nitty-gritty. This is a function which returns a parser, so we lexically let over the values that we want the parser to know about. And then we create the parser with this lambda expression. It takes a input, of course. It checks to see if the input is empty, as always. And then it calls the parser on the input. And remember, that's going to produce a pair, or nil. If it produces nil, we're done. Our parser fails also. But if it produces a pair, we take the parsed value from that pair, and we pass it to the function which produces a parser, and we get a new parser. And then we apply that new parser to the leftovers, and we've now combined our parser and our parser-producing function in a way which lets us pass around both the pair value and the leftover inputs in an intelligent way. And it'll be a little bit more clear in the next slide, but really think about this. We're basically saying we want to be able to evaluate subsequent parsers that are living inside parser producer in the context of previous values produced by this parser. That's the main idea with parser bind. And that will become really clear in a second, because we're going to talk about a little bit about Lisp and a little bit about binding, and that'll hopefully make this whole process a little bit more transparent. Okay. Now, actually, I was going to talk about types of monads and stuff, but I actually think it's clearer to move on to the next slide, and we can come back to this if we feel like we need to. Okay. All right. So, let's talk a little bit about Lisp. So, in Lisp, unlike a lot of dynamic languages, you introduce variables explicitly. So, you don't just say x equals 10. You actually use something called a let expression to let values come into existence. So this is an example of a let expression. You say let star x 10, y 11, plus xy. And this means let x equal 10, let y equal 11, and then evaluate the body in the context where those variables are defined. And the expression let star is special because it lets each value depend upon the previously defined variables. And now you should start hearing some of the same language that we used to talk about parser binding. And that's because let star is essentially binding variables in the context of previously bound variables. And so when we defined parser bind, we were extending that notion of function of variable binding. And we're about to write a piece of syntax which drives that point home, where we really show that the parser bind function extends the value, the notion of binding. But let's just think about what this expression let star translates into in terms of pure functions, function application. So if we could expand this let star macro, it would look like this. We'd have a function call where we would call the function of x. And inside that function of x, there's a function call where we call the function of y. Inside that function is a value that depends on x and y being defined. And outside, we apply those functions to the values we want to bind them to. So in other words, we can think of the function in Emacs Lisp called function call, the function that calls a function, as binding the variable that the function has as a parameter inside the body of that function. Okay, so if it's a little bit clearer if we define this function called id bind, which is the identity bind operation, and it just takes a value and a function, and it binds that value to the variable the function takes. So if we rewrite this expansion in terms of id bind, it's a little bit more clear. We're saying bind the value of 10 to the variable x inside this expression. Inside that expression, we bind the value 11 to the variable y, and we finally evaluate the body of the let expression. So binding, in this case, is just the process of giving a variable a value. And when we do parser let star, we're going to define a little piece of syntax that lets us do that in a slightly more intelligent way. So parser let star is a macro. And what it's going to do is basically, instead of calling the identity bind operation, it will expand a let star expression in terms of the parser bind operation. And the parser bind operation will then provide us an environment where the passing around of the input is handled transparently, and so is the passing around of the values the parsers produce. So here we define the macro parser let star. And we define this function simple parser return again, just for completeness. And now we can create a parser using a parser let star expression. And this is an example of a parser that does the same thing as parse ABC. And if we call this parser using funcall on a string, oops, we forgot to define simple parser bind in the previous slide. Let's go back and do that. Okay. If we call this expression, we get exactly the same output we got before. So in other words, we have found A, found B, found C, and the rest of the parser. And what's nice about this is that we have a convenient form where we bind these variables, A result, B result, C result, to just the output, just the parsed values of each parser. And we let the bind expression itself, the let expression itself, handle passing around the input. That's the critical upshot. And so even if you want to sweep all of this monad and syntax junk under the rug, you should, you know, figure out that what we're looking at here is a series of symbol bindings that are binding to the result of the parser on each right-hand side. So A res is bound to just the parsed result, B res is bound to just the parsed result of B, so on and so forth. If any of these parsers are nil, then the whole expression has the value nil. Okay. Now we've got all of the sort of tools we need to start building non-trivial parsers. And let's actually go up here and look at what a parser let star expands into. So if we have this expression parser let star, parse A, parse B, simple parser return, it expands into this. It literally expands into this piece of code. We have parser bind. We want to bind the variable A to the value produced by parse A. And then inside that expression, we want to bind the variable B to the value produced by parse B. And finally, we want to evaluate the inside of this body in a context where A and B are defined, And simple parser return says, return a parser which does nothing to the input, because we've already handled all the input processing in these other places, but just returns the list AB. So we've accomplished what we wanted to when we were looking at combined parsers, which is to produce a formalism where the input passing around is pushed behind the scenes and the values are exposed for us to produce, to do operations with. Okay. Now, that's the most complicated part of the talk, and but the rest of the talk depends on having at least a working understanding of how that works. So what kind of stuff can we do with this formalism now that we've defined it? Well, one thing we can do is make a parser which is dependent upon previously parsed values, and we're going to do that in this slide. And that parser is going to be a sort of triangle parser. It's going to parse the string AB or the string BC or the string CA. So in other words, once we've parsed the first value, we need to make a decision about what the next value we're going to parse is. And it turns out that this parser bind expression is going to make that easier to do. So here's parse A or B or C. We'll eventually have a nicer way of defining functions like this. But for now, we'll just write a parser which takes the input, and if it gets A, B, or C, it returns found A, found B, or found C. And if it doesn't get any of those, it returns nil. So that's what this case expression essentially amounts to. And then we'll have a function that produces a parser, a combinator. And this parser takes the previously parsed value, and it says, well, if I had found A before, return parse B. If I had found B before, return parse C, so on and so forth. We define this function and this function, and then we go to parser let star to define our triangle parser. And the parser let star expression looks like this. We say, get the result of parsing the first character. That's first character. We don't know what it is, but it's going to be one of parse A, B, or C, or nil. And then use that first result to make a new parser that parses the character that we want to parse for the second result. And that's this expression. So, and then finally, return a parser that returns the pair first character and second character. And what we get when we do that is a function triangle parser. And if we apply it to a string, we get found A, found B. If we apply it to another string, we get found B, found C, found C, found A, but AA doesn't parse and CQ doesn't parse. So I think that's pretty cool, and I think everybody should too, including Haskell Curry. Okay, so now we're just going to get into a sort of explosive celebration of defining combinators. So we're going to just define in rapid succession a bunch of combinators, and I won't go into detail with every single one because we'll run out of time, but we're going to use them to do a non-trivial example. So this is the satisfies combinator. It takes a function, it pulls one item off the input, and if the function is true on that item, it parses that item, and otherwise it fails. This is the many things parser. It's actually a combinator also. It takes a number, and it just parses n things if it can. If it can't parse n things, it fails. But otherwise, it just grabs n things off of the input and returns them. Matches is defined in terms of that combinator. It takes a string, it pulls a number of things off of the input equal to the length of the string, and then it compares the string and that stuff it's pulled off the input, and it only returns the thing if they match. So this is a way of making string matching parsers. Or is a parser which takes a series of parsers, and it produces a parser which will parse true on any of those, and it will return that value. So if we wanted to produce parse A, B, or C, as we did before, we would use the OR combinator. We'd parse pass parse A, parse B, parse C. And it's a little bit complicated because you want to do this without growing the stack, and so this is a non-obvious implementation, but it's a little bit nicer than it could be. Okay. And here's an example of using some of these combinators together. This is a function that returns a parser that parses cat or dog. And you'll notice that I use minus signs in front of all of these function definitions, and that's going to indicate that we've got a function which returns a parser. So that's just a convention that I'm using. Okay, so parse A or B, cat or dog rather, we use parser like star to create a parser. We say the result is going to be either or matches cat or matches dog. And then we return the result, whatever it is. And if we try to parse ew, then we don't get a thing, but we do parse cat and we do parse dog. So that's the basic story up till now. Okay, we have another page of combinators. Okay, here's the zero or more combinator. It takes a parser and it parses as many things off of the input as it can that match that parser, including none. And if it returns none, it just returns nil. It returns an empty list of results. If it gets more than one, it returns a list of all of the results it's got. So zero or more. We can say zero or more matches A, and we get see a list of A's and then the rest of the string. Zero or more part, and this of course just gives you nil, which in Lisp is the empty list, but you could imagine it's an empty vector or something. Right? One or more, of course, is easy to find in terms of zero or more. We first try to parse one for sure. If that doesn't work, we'll get nil, and then we parse zero or more of the same parser. So here is dog, 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 cat, dog, 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 dog. And the nice thing to notice is that when you if we change this to one or more, we'll fail. So one or more means we've got to get at least one. Okay. The maybe parser is just like saying, try to parse the parser you pass in, but if you don't pass, just return a nil value. PEmpty is a sort of special function. It's a parser that detects the end of the input in case you want to have a parser that is sure to terminate at the end of the thing. This returns a takes a parser and wraps the result in the list function. This only parses the opposite or the negation of the parser you pass in. And is defined in terms of and too, but it basically parses a series of parsers. So you parse in P1, P1, P2, P3, and it parses all of them and returns P3. And if any of them fail, the whole thing fails. And list combines those anded results into a list. And then finally, n of, which we're actually going to use in the next slide, parses exactly n of a particular parser. So for instance, here we have parse n of 3 matches a. So we want 3 a's, and we get a parser that parses 3 a's and then leaves the rest of the string. Okay. All right, so what is this real-world example that was alluded to? Well, if we go to look at RFC 1459, which is the IRC chat protocol standard, they provide a pseudo-BNF grammar for IRC messages. And that grammar is described from top down as being a message which consists of a prefix, command, and parameter for the command, and then maybe a tail. And each of those things is defined in terms of more and more primitive things. And so what's nice about parsers as we design them with this toolkit is that you can design them just like you design programs from the bottom up. So we're actually going to follow more or less the bottom of this BNF grammar all the way up to the top. And we'll start by defining what a trailing string is. So the description says any empty even sequence of octets, so characters, including null or character turner line feed. And we're going to ignore all three of those. We're just going to assume a preparser is removing the character turns and line feeds. So we're parsing things one line at a time. So trailing is just a parser which is zero or more anything. And we're going to eventually combine the result of all of our parsing into an association list. So every time we return a value from our parsers, we're going to tag that value with what it is we found. So this is going to be tagged with the trailing keyword. Okay. So that's trailing. Colon then trailing is going to be useful later. It's just the parser which parses a colon, and then we parse trailing. We're going to want to be able to parse white space, and even though the standard doesn't quite say this, I'm going to basically assume anytime we see space, we have an arbitrary number of spaces, but at least one, and that spaces include the tab character. So white spaces is one or more space or tab, and then middle is a little complicated. If we go read it, it says any non-empty sequence of octets, not including space or null, but it can't start with colon. So we have the not combinator from the previous lie, so we say not colon, and then the contents are zero or more not white spaces. And we're going to tag those with the middle keyword. Spaces middle does exactly what it sounds like. It just parses the spaces away from the front of middle. Now, params is by far the most complicated of the parsers, and that's because we're going to handle parsing both the parameters and also the tail if we get any trailing information. So what we look for is parameters, which are zero or more space middles, so basically zero or more groups of middle type things, white space, and then maybe a trailing value followed by a colon followed by trailing information. And then we return a list of params, so the params values, and we combine them together by mapping across the input and taking out the params part. And then if we got a trailing, we also return the trailing value, but if not, we just cons this onto a list. So the upshot is that this parser parses both the params values and also the trailing, and it returns a part of an association list that has both of those things. Okay, and it turns out we're actually going to need this function. Not white space is just a single non-white space character. Not white spaces is many not white space characters. And then we're going to need letters and numbers, but not punctuation. So we basically create lexical context where all of the letters are enumerated. Smarty Pants will point out, of course, that we could have done this with a regular expression, but we're doing it this way instead because it's a little bit easier to read. Numbers are all the characters that represent digits. Punctuation is everything else. Okay, and then we can define, in terms of these values, a letter parser, which parses a single character that represents a letter, a number parser that parses a single character that represents a number, and a punctuation parser. Okay, and that lets us parse the command, and we are told from the standard that a command is either three numbers or one or more letters. And in fact, really, we could make an exactly n parser to do this, but we're not going to bother. Okay. And we parse this command, either numbers or letters, and we return a tagged value, once again, command and the concatenated results of the one or more parse. Okay. And finally, we're parsing the prefix. And in fact, just for the sake of brevity, prefixes can contain all sorts of specific kinds of information, but we're going to basically parse a prefix as a collection of characters that doesn't have spaces in it. Okay. And we're tagging it once again with a symbol. And then here we put all of our little sub-parsers together into an IRC message, and we use it to parse this, I forgot to define letter up here. Oops. Okay. That should do it. Now we combine it into a association list that represents the entire parsed value, and it's broken up into a table, essentially, of all the pieces of the parsing that we want to do. So that gives us exactly what we want, which is a way of constructing a parser, relatively complicated parser, from a bunch of simple pieces. And there's not a side effect in this entire talk. Everything is purely functional. So that's interesting if you're into that. Okay, so that brings us to the conclusions and the observations. As I said at the beginning of the talk, monadic parser combinations is about combinators, or a methodology kind of, a collection of techniques to combine a bunch of simple functional parsers into a big functional parser. And I think this is nice because, first of all, it's functional, so you don't have to worry about keeping track of side effects or making mistakes with scope or anything like that, where you modify memory that you shouldn't have. But it's also nice because the parsers themselves enjoy the full power of the programming language you're living in, and they can be tested as individual pieces very easily. And I really like that, and you just sort of it suits the interactive development, which has become in vogue, and I think is rightly in vogue. So I think that's really nice that you can do all this incremental development. Now, if you're interested in monads and the sort of meat of the functional programming, it's sort of interesting to observe that the parser monad is always a variation on the state monad. And in fact, the one we looked at today was just the state transformer on the maybe monad. And that means basically that our monadic values are parsers or nil. And if they're nil, we know we have special behavior to treat that nil value. But otherwise, we parse. And once you realize that this is just the state transformation on the maybe monad, you can start to think about other transformations. For instance, if you use state T on sequence M, you have a non-deterministic parser monad. That's a monad that is that has a series of... each parser can return multiple values. So in other words, the parser can parse something in several different ways. If there's an ambiguous stream and you need to parse further to resolve that ambiguity, you can do that using sequence monads as the inner monad of a state transformer. And if you wanted to do that lazily, you could use the state transformer on the stream monad. And of course, if you recognize that the parsers are just part of the state monad, you realize that you can, of course, pass around other stuff inside that state. So, for instance, if you parse precedence, like if you have a bunch of operators with different precedences, one way of parsing those is to use two stacks for operators and values, and you could pass those stacks around in the state. You'd have to rewrite all your combinators to account for the fact that there was more in the input to each parser than just the string, but you could, of course, carry around arbitrary state. So this is the sort of window into how to make arbitrarily powerful functional parsers using thinking about them as monads. So anyway, I think that's sort of the end of the talk, and if anyone has any comments, I'd be happy to hear them, or questions or whatever. I'm going to eventually put this on YouTube, so please comment and subscribe, because I'll probably do other stuff like this. And thank you so much for listening. And I hope that the talk was both informative and interesting.